Warning, the following program is designed for casual wrestling fans and is meant purely for entertainment. If you're SAWFT, proceed at your own risk. Viewer discretion is advised. Brother, I'm going on a wild Hulk Hogan. If I like get some moment, I'll make sure it's an explosion. Cause lately I've been seeing stars, trying to kick out of this choke cord. But it's no holds barred, middle finger like I'm Stone Cold. What is up, everybody? It is your boy, We Too Deep, and we are back with another episode of the Slapping Meat Wrestling Podcast, recording on a Sunday. Trying to, you know, give you as many episodes as we can as we approach the end of the year and end of this season. So just some housekeeping. We're finishing the year, right? Here on the Slapping Meat Wrestling Podcast. We got the final full week of shows in terms of like normal, how we do things, right? So we got one more week next week. So Tuesday, me and AVD, we're going to do the last sort of, standard Slapping Meat Wrestling Podcast of the year next Tuesday. Next Friday will be the last sort of full Friday show of the year. And then maybe, depending on how I feel with Saturday Night Main Event, you may get another Sunday show next Sunday. That depends, like, so with, like, Survivor Series, I wanted to do it because it's a big event. We're doing Deadline today. So with Saturday Night Main Event not necessarily being a PLE, I may not react to it. I feel like it's, you know, part of me feels like it's going to be just a sort of glorified house show type live event show that's on NBC. I think we're going to get some big moments, but I may not necessarily react to it. I may or may not, depends on how I feel about the show, right? And then of course the 17th, so we're 9 days away from the final episode of the year for the Slapping Meat Wrestling Podcast, which will be the end of the year awards. Again, December the 17th, myself, Wavy D, Junkyard James, K-Doc Cody. We may have two other guests on here as well. We may or may not, that's still in the works. But yeah, it's going to be a great, great ending of the year. Some other housekeeping. Just keep a lookout on the Slapping Meat Wrestling YouTube channel. I'll go ahead and just sort of let it out of the bag. Obviously, we have, you know, women's pro wrestling action coming. And over the break, rest of December, I'm going to be finalizing all of that and getting stuff ready for that. That's going to start in January. Another thing, I want to expand the way we do content here, or change the way we do content here. So what I recognized with the Friday show was I wanted it to be a show where I could talk about other things other than wrestling. But what I realized was wrestling fans may not care about football or cultural stuff like that, right? So I'm going to sort of stretch myself out a little bit more. We'll have the Tuesday show. We'll do our normal Friday show still going into the new year. But we're also going to have a completely separate podcast on the same YouTube channel, the Slapping Meat Football Podcast here. So the YouTube channel is going to change names. It's probably going to end up becoming like the Slapping Meat YouTube channel With Slapping Meat being the brand name, and then we have the wrestling podcast, and then the football podcast. Only going to be football, not all sports. But keep an eye out for that. You may get an episode before the new year. Just a wink, wink. Check out that the episode one is going to be sort of like a teaser episode. That'll be probably up by the end of the Sunday today that I'm recording this as well. I'm spreading my show. Right, we're preparing for what's going to be. That show will probably be a Friday show as well. So lots to look forward to as we move into the new year. With a whole bunch of content coming on this. We're done with sort of the cultural topics. The one that dropped on Friday, I understand that was a heavy topic, maybe not the best topic to talk about on a wrestling show. And so that'd be the last of that in that method, right? So looking forward to, just to sort of, give you the too long didn't read. The YouTube channel name is going to change to the Slapping Meat YouTube channel. We're going to have the Slapping Meat Wrestling Podcast and then the Slapping Meat Football Podcast, which will just be me. And that will probably be a Friday show as well, right? So more content for you guys to consume. And I can't wait for that to happen. But let's dive into why you're here, the wrestling shows. So I initially just wanted this to be a quick dive in of deadline. I got my initial plan when I planned this probably Wednesday or Thursday was, okay, we're just going to talk about deadline and I'll give my opinion on that. But then some other news started to circle around. So I do want to cover some of that. I want to, we're going to end the show with me sort of giving my last of my Survivor Series thoughts that I've had over the last week. Discuss that New Day situation again, and we'll end with my response to, or my reaction to, the CM Punk behind the scenes of his return last year. So we got a lot to cover. This is the full episode that turned out here. So the first news item that I want to just sort of briefly cover, I'm not going to spend a lot of time, is it appears that the man known as Ricochet, whom I like to call Pretty Ricky, it appears he has found Tony Khan's stash of a booger sugar again. Because this man, and so a lot of people are like, oh, he's kayfabe, this, that, and that. Okay, that's fine. If it's a kayfabe interview, he worked us. But part of me doesn't believe that this is kayfabe. This dude, I think, honestly believes that he said something along the lines of like, without me, AEW doesn't exist. And so if you take that at face value, obviously he's lying because the company was doing pretty well before he got there. I understand what he was saying. He's talking about style. He's saying, without me doing the flippy shit on the indies and Lucha Underground and excuse me, PWG and all of that shit, right? This wouldn't be, mainstream wrestling. And to a point, I think he's right. But, excuse me, but what kind of, narcissism do you have to be on to where, everything circles around you? I don't know. Ever since Ricochet left and they started running their mouth, Sam left, they started running their mouth online. It just seems like there's this narcissism. And I'll tell you exactly what I think this is, and then we'll move on. What I think happened was Ricochet recognized, right? I'm going to leave WWE. I'm going to show up on AEW. And what that did, it garnered a little bit of press towards people talking about it, right? He got a little bit of attention, right? Sam left, and that whole situation happened. Essentially, Ricochet just told the internet to go F themselves and told them off. And what ended up happening was he realized that in doing that, he he basically removed anyone talking about it, right? He, instead of getting good press or negative press, he was getting no press. Like, people just stopped caring about him. And so what he needed to do, I believe what this was, is an attempt to get people to at least mention him, right? And it's working. People are talking about him. But I think this is like an attempt to at least get people to mention his name and to care about who Ricochet is. Because for the most part, the wrestling's not doing anything. Unless you're like one of those like super like hardcore fans, but for someone like me, like you're not these flippy matches that you're doing, you know, like this whole Continental Classic that AEW doing, you're not doing anything for me to come in and watch your product, right? It's just a bunch of people, you know, essentially. And I saw this tweet, and it's 100% right. Tony Khan essentially killed New Japan. He takes all their good talent, never gives anything back. He killed the G1 Classic, essentially. I think they still do it, but like, do people actually care about it the same way they do? Because you can see the same thing on AEW with the Continental Classic. And so I just, Tony Khan is a parasite to the business. And I say that with respect to the business and understanding that that's probably like a thing that you probably shouldn't say about someone, but like is the business better because Tony Khan's here? Because part of me is willing to believe that once Vince McMahon stepped down, that we would get the same type of product with WWE without Tony Khan, right? That all that really was required was Vince McMahon stepping down. And I don't know what it is about people who go to AEW who seem to think like the world revolves around them and they're the greatest thing to the business. And that they're like the savior of pro wrestling. I don't know. I just find it pretty interesting. I think we need to do a study on this. Excuse me. Some more news. I guess WWE held like a press conference or some sort of like informational thing about what's going on with Netflix. And two things came out of this. The first is that Nick Khan tells us that Monday Night Raw is staying PG when it gets to Netflix. Which, let's just be honest, is perfectly expected. I think some of us hoped that it would become like PG-13, but I think this is the most expected result. Like, if we actually understood the business, that there was no way in hell that they were changing their rating, right? Nick Khan explained it best. It's good. It's family friendly. It's marketing friendly. It's advertiser friendly. It's the product is, you know, they're there to make money and get people to invest. It's investor friendly product, right? But let's also just talk about this from like a fan point of view, right? Everyone so wants the Attitude Era back. But the second Carlito says a joke that may be a little bit racially insensitive in character or you know, the internet flips out. Like you can handle the Attitude Era. Like, you want it, but you actually can handle it, these modern-day wrestling fans, right? And I also, like what about the Attitude Era? I did a whole episode on this. I think the Attitude Era is completely overrated. If we actually look back in hindsight, that we would notice that a lot of the product was trash that came out of the Attitude Era, that we don't like the whole era as a whole. We like certain moments. We like the superstars. We like Rock, Austin, Taker, Triple H. We like some of that, but we don't like the whole Attitude Era as a whole, right? And I think the Attitude Era has been highly overrated as a wrestling era. I would probably put it, from a content perspective, probably as one of the worst eras in wrestling. I would put the PG era underneath of it because it was, for the most part, corny. But this, I'm going to call it the new era. This is the, excuse me. I think when we look back in 20 years, we're going to recognize that the new era, the era we're currently in, is the best era of wrestling. I think the Ruthless Aggression era will go behind it. I think the Golden Era with Hogan and all of that I think is third. And then maybe you get into considerations of the PG era, the Attitude era, and stuff like that, right? Yeah, so then the second part news that came out is Triple H confirmed that Pat McAfee will be back on commentary when they get to Netflix, which, again, I think is kind of expected. I'm not necessarily the happiest about this news. I've been very outspoken about I'm not the biggest fan of Pat McAfee on commentary. I think for special events, he adds a little bit of hype. I think Pat McAfee is a fantastic sports podcaster. I think he fits College Game Day. He fits his own personal podcast. I just think from what a commentator is supposed to do is tell a story to the people watching the show. They're the storytellers, right? They have to tell me what's important. They have to sell me on things that are important, right? And I don't necessarily think Pat McAfee does that part of the job the best, which is why they pair him with Michael Cole, right? Because Michael Cole's the best at that, right? But what Pat McAfee does bring is a little bit of hype, which would be fine if these were plainly live shows. But in terms of, like, the only people that could see them are live in person. But, like, for a TV show, like, Pat McAfee can get quite annoying very, very early in a run. Like, I'll probably be hyped for the first, like, 2 weeks. It's back. It'll be fun. But it'll run its course, and I'll move on from it. I like the announced teams the way they currently are. My question then, if Cole and McAfee are running Raw, what's going to happen to Tessitore? We get in the three-man booth with Corey and Wade. That's an interesting thing. Is Tessitore just here to fill in while Pat McAfee's gone? I don't know. And so those are the questions that I have coming out of this. Again, cool, he's back. But for me, just personally, as someone who likes commentary and listens to commentary, Pat McAfee, far from someone that I would actually want on the booth, to be honest with you. All right, let's discuss NXT Deadline. So for those who have not watched NXT Deadline and want to watch NXT Deadline, pause the episode here, go watch NXT Deadline, then come back, right? Moving forward, there are going to be spoilers, there's going to be reactions, and we're going to talk about the show, right? So the first thing we need to talk about is Tuesday before, you know, on Tuesday, Eddie Thorpe wins the final spot in, which let's talk about that. Did not expect Eddie Thorpe to win that, did not expect Rince Sinclair to win. So I did expect Lola to get involved with Jada Parker. That it did end up becoming the fifth match that I didn't have when I recorded the episode on Tuesday. That ended up dropping on Friday, right? So Eddie Thorpe gets attacked at the end of the episode on Tuesday, right? And so the question is he going to be there? Is he 100%? What's the answer, right? And we get announced 30 minutes, 40 minutes before the show starts. Ava announces Eddie Thorpe's not participating, but I'm going to find a suitable replacement to take his spot, right? So we start the show with the men's Iron Survivor match. excuse me. With that match, I liked it. It was a bit it was what I expected it to be. When you look at the four people and Wesley, Nathan Fraser, Javon Evans, and can't think of the other one who won his way in. Javon Evans. Oh, Ethan Page. When you look at that crowd, three of those four are the more flippy, fast-paced style wrestlers, right? So I expected the match that we got, right? It was going to be high action, high flying, which isn't necessarily my favorite. But here's the thing. I'm not against that style, right? What I'm against with AEW is every match being that style, right? That fast-paced, no selling, right? So, like, with like Wavy D, we were in the casual wrestling watching this, right? And he, we had this discussion, like, what makes Wesley, Nathan Fraser, Javon Evans different? Because on Friday, I had mentioned that I wasn't a fan of the Motor City Machine Guns. They haven't really won me over with their run here, right? And so he asked the question, like, what makes Javon Evans, what makes Nathan Fraser, what makes Wesley different than the Motor City Machine Guns? And I think there's an actual difference, right? They're all the sort of flippy indie style, which isn't my favorite style, but I don't hate it. I think it's good in moderation. The problem that I always have is with AEW is that every match, it seemed like, on a card had that same style of wrestling, right? And the problem is then when like it, everyone did it, and so it's not unique, right? With Deadline, this was quite honestly like the only match that really had this style of wrestling, right? And so, but there's an actual legitimate answer here. So when you look at the Motor City Machine Guns time here in WWE, only in WWE. See, the problem with it, and this isn't really a problem, but the way Wavy D sees this is he sees Motor City Machine Guns through a different lens. He sees them as my favorite tag team, right? That's sort of like their slogan, right? He sees them as this tag team that revolutionized tag team wrestling, which is fine because he was introduced to them in their primes in 2000, in the early 2000s, right? Whereas I'm introduced to them on 2024 and not necessarily like, and so what happens is you come in, think about the time they've been here for all but like 2.5 months. If that, like a month and a half, right? They had a 42-day title reign. And their debut match was the qualifier to get to the finals, right? So excuse me. They've been here all but 50 days in WWE, something like that, right? So about 2 months in the company. And not once have I been intrigued by a promo. Not once has they seemed interesting. I don't think they've been on a PLE in the 2 months they've been there. So obviously they don't see them as good enough to be on the PLE. That's a problem with that whole tag division though. And so I just, there's nothing there. There's no gimmick that I think that they're playing. I'm not getting a gimmick out of them. I'm not getting a storyline. The storyline is essentially the Motor City Machine Guns are there. They get the sort of nepotism run of, and not really, it's not nepotism, but they get like the, hey, we've done this for 30 plus years. We're going to come in, win your title, and then nothing comes from it, right? And so the difference between someone like Wesley and Nathan Fraser is I know with Wesley that he can run a character. He can run a gimmick, right? I know he can tell me a promo. I know he can sell me on a story, right? I know with Nathan Fraser that he can run a story, that he can play a character. He can run a gimmick, right? We've seen it through and through, right? If you've watched NXT, you've seen Nathan Fraser go from like talk show host to you know, tag team champion and the such, right? And so I think I get more of what I want out of a wrestler, which is less of the X's and O's. I could care less about how good your moveset is. I really don't care. I don't care how well you can do a 450 splash. I don't care about any of those things. I don't care about the X's and O's. What I care about is the story that gets me to watch, right? Because the match, let's just be completely under, like this is how I view the business. This is how I view wrestling, right? You're telling me a story. The championships, the matches, and all of that, they're props to tell and continue a story, right? They're plot points. What you're supposed to tell me a story to get me to watch the match, and then you're supposed to either end the story there, end the feud there, and begin a new one, or continue the story from that match to the next match. And I don't get that with the Motor City Machine Guns, right? Right. There's no story between them. They're not playing a gimmick, right? So to me, it's just like super indie, you know, just in the way they react, in the way they, you know, point to the crowd and all of that during the moves. They hesitate on certain points where, you know, like they're setting up a tag team finisher and they sort of pause and point to the crowd and stuff like that takes me out of the moment. Whereas Wes Lee, like, very, very good. Javon Evans, very good. Nathan Frazer, very good at playing some sort of character and giving me a storyline to watch the match. Now, I think the match itself was decent. The fifth man being, you know, that was all we were wondering, was who's going to be this fifth guy. When it came out and it was Oba Femi, I said this match is over. Oba's winning, but this changes the rest of my card. So the first thing I want to say is I told you guys they were starting with this men's Iron Survivor because the story they were coming out of this with Nathan Frazer is banged up, right? But my assumption was Eddie Thorpe would be in the match. I thought Javon Evans would win, which means that we would need a heel champion since we have a babyface number one contender. Oba Femi comes out. Now we have a heel number one contender. I said at that moment, Trick Williams is retaining the title. And I should have stuck with my gut 3 months ago that the next big feud was Trick and Oba. I should have stuck with my gut, stopped reading the internet, and here we go, right? We're moving forward. New Year's Evil is going to be January 7th. Which is the first NXT of 2025 and the episode after the debut on Netflix, right? And so I think Trick Williams will still be at the debut on Netflix. I think they're going to sell the Trick Williams versus Oba Femi match. Excuse me. Unless Trick Williams and Oba Femi fight at the show on the 17th in Lowell, Massachusetts, right? And they take the belt off of Trick there. But Oba Femi is going to be the next NXT champion. I think that then transitions into Oba versus Javon Evans, which will be your David and Goliath type story. I think that's where we're at. Excuse me. So overall, not the best match of the night, not the worst. I think it did a very decent job at what it was supposed to do. I know a lot of people may have considered like the ending sort of messed up. You know, Javon Evans like hesitated with 5 seconds to go to put the pin on. I don't have an issue with it because he was banged up, and so he sort of hit his finisher. And he was hurt, and he couldn't get to the pin. That was what they were trying to tell, was that because of how much damage he had had, he couldn't get to the pin to tie it up. And so I think this was very innovative. I like it. Moving on to a match that I was not a big fan of. That was this underground match. Now, I'm not a fan of underground matches to begin with, for one reason and one reason alone. They try to convince us that this underground match is like an MMA-style match. Like, it's the merger of MMA, karate, taekwondo, like which are all mixed martial arts. So I could have just said MMA, right? It's sort of like booked as like the mixture of MMA and pro wrestling. Right. The problem with that is you can't mix the two. You just can't. Right. Like, even still, like, you're trying to convince me this is like a real fight, but I know it's pre-planned. Right. I know it's I know that this thing is predetermined, that it's still fake fighting. Right. And so if I was a fan of UFC or MMA or of any kind, like, I would look at this match and be like, what the hell are you doing? This doesn't work. And I'm not even that big of an MMA fan, but I look at this and I'm like, yeah, this doesn't work for me. Right. You could have gotten the same result with just a no holds barred or a no DQ style match, you know, pushed off the street fight until this match right here. and gotten the same effect that you got with the underground match. The underground gimmick doesn't work. I didn't even like it when trained professionals in MMA like Ronda and Shayna went after it. I wasn't even a fan of it there because at the end of the day, I still know that it's predetermined. And so, yeah, I just wasn't a big fan of all of that. Not necessarily the biggest fan of the underground match. It wasn't working for me, right? So we move into this tag team championship match. Where surprisingly Axiom and the guys, this was a banger. This was a banger of a match. No Quarter Catch Crew is fantastic. Tavian Heights is a future star. Miles Bourne, right? Like I hate to do this with him, but I bro is good without even recognizing that he's deaf, right? Like if he even without knowing that part about him. Bro is fantastic, right? But then you recognize this dude's deaf. I think he wears some sort of like, I think they're called cochlear devices, to where he can hear, but it's still like he was born deaf, right? And so I think, right, and they've even played into it in his gimmick. Bro has the look of a pro wrestler. 100% behind this gimmick, and Miles Bourne. I was upset they didn't win. Now my only negative with this match was that there were about 20 too many false finishes. Right, I think it went a little bit longer than I would have wanted it to go, which is fine. I kind of expected it. And I just, the amount of false finishes here, I also, like, I'm confused with the story, right? Because I think you had a really good chance of, like, creating Axiom versus Nathan Fraser as a story by having them lose the titles and then, you know, they could fight at New Year's Evil. I just, having them win doesn't make much sense to me. But I'm willing to let it play out. We move to, I'm going to go ahead and say it, the worst match of the night, even worse than the underground match, was Trick and Ridge. And it's not necessarily any of them individually's fault. I just don't necessarily think there's a lot going in here. Ridge isn't the best. And again, I'm not an X's and O's type guy. I just, neither of them have extensive movesets. And I just felt like everything was sort of off with this match. Nothing was super memorable. This just sort of felt like a transitionary. Like we need a champion, our contender, and we have all the main guys who are contending in the Iron Survivor. So we just got to put someone else here. And then in the process, you ruin Chase Yu, which I wasn't a big fan of. I would have much rather had Andre Chase in this match, and had him lose to Trick, because I think Rich Holland as a heel, this in a way sort of lessens that, lessens his importance as a heel. Like it sort of just takes away all of his sort of momentum that he was building. I think he's one of the better heels in wrestling right now. I just, when you don't win matches, It takes away from the effect, right? And then we get to the best match of the night, which was the women's Iron Survivor, which I'm so glad this main evented. What a way to end the show. We got every single spot that I was sort of expecting, right? We got Rince and Claire on the match, who was there to essentially be the one that got bullied, right? She was the odd fit of the group, right? She took two pins sort of early in the match, one to Sol Ruka, one to Julia. Zarya comes in and she's sort of the brute. So we're trying to prove that she's like a badass who, you know, at one point I think she took like a powerbomb through a table, right? And then a few minutes later we get that effect where she's like rising from the dead. We see your rising and overcoming it. You got Sol Ruca, who is probably the best athlete in WWE right now, at least on NXT. Just fantastic, some of the moves she does. She did that like gymnastic move over the top rope, which typically I would be against, but that thing like was one of the best moves I've seen. I knew Sol wasn't winning. 100% expect her on the Royal Rumble. 100% expect her on the main roster next year. 100%. Yeah, but the main thing we were definitely setting up here was the pecking order of Julia versus Stephanie Vaquer, right? Because Zarya's probably got 2 or 3 more years in NXT to sort of build herself, right? Sol Ruca's done. Rin Sinclair, I think, is good in her gimmick. She definitely didn't seem like a competitor. Even like the way she sort of lucked her way into the match to begin with. And so we get the final stare down, and it's Stephanie versus Julia. And that's all this was, sort of, this is the tease. This is the big stand and deliver match, right? Julia wins, which is fantastic. I enjoy that. I know what the critique's going to be. We too deep. You say Triple H is uncreative. Copy, paste, repeat. Well, they sort of use the same story in both Iron Survivors. A little bit thrown off by that both Iron Survivors end with, like, trying to get the pin at the final second. But I don't know what much more you like that's the sort of intrigue you need to make that match mean something, right? Like, you don't want someone going up 4 pins to nothing. That takes away from, like, the mystique of the match, right? You want the final seconds coming down to the wire. I'm trying to tie this thing up sort of energy. I wasn't too upset with it. But there's obviously a pecking order. In the women's division, Julia's going to win the title. I think that means Stephanie Vaquer is next. I think that means stand and deliver will probably – well, let me take that back, because we got Vengeance Day. So Julia's going to be champion. And then I think we walk into Vengeance Day, Royal Rumble weekend probably, and we'll probably get, like, Zarya in that opportunity, right? Or someone like Jada Parker. In that opportunity, who will ultimately fail and not win the title. And then I think Vaquer is going to be Julius versus Stephanie Vaquer is the Mania weekend stand and deliver match. That is going to be the match. Without a doubt, this match was fantastic from beginning to end. Sol Ruca is my MVP of the night, even though she didn't win. I would have liked her to not be in the penalty box as this was ending. Because, excuse me, you had like a 3-way tie, right? You had Sol Ruca, Julia, and Vaquer all tied at 2, if I was correct, right? I don't fully remember, to be honest, off the top of my head how it was. What I would have liked to seen was Julia get that second pin, because I think they were all 5 were tied at 1. Julia got the second pin, and what I would have liked to seen was like a mad dash from Vaquer and Sol Ruca to try to get that second pin. And ultimately, what we need from one of these is sudden death, right? Where one of them, we're into like a 5-way tie, next pin wins, or ends in like a 2-way where like 2 people have 2 pins, and or 2 decisions, and the time ends, and then they come out and say, well, it's the next pin win between those 2. And it becomes like a 5-minute time limit type match. And then if you can't settle it in that sudden death 5 minutes, then it becomes a tie, and they both will be number one contenders at the next big show, right? Because typically it is New Year's Evil where the number one contender gets that match, right? So ultimately, I think eventually we'll get to that at some point. There's only so many times you can do this match and do the same ending without doing something new. Overall, I definitely 100% think it was better than Survivor Series. I think it's, without being biased, like, I do think it is better than Full Gear. 100% better than Survivor Series. But I don't think it was the greatest PLE they did this year for NXT. I still think that belongs to Heatwave. It wasn't the best, right? I got what I expected. Deadline's 100% around the Iron Survivor trying. And what it did is it set the pecking order for the beginning of the year heading into Stand and Deliver. excuse me. I think Stand and Deliver will be a really big event. I think Obafemi can run a 3-month program as NXT champion, lose at Stand and Deliver, get moved, transferred, whatever it is, the terminology is now, to the main roster, and I think that's the big move there. So let's move forward to, I got some final Survivor Series thoughts, and then I'm going to put this to rest. We're about a week out from Survivor Series, and I don't feel like I've given enough, you know, time to what I'm thinking. So the first thing is, I think we're 100% at a place where there is no longer a big four. So I was listening to the Casual Wrestling Podcast with Nerdy D, and he has a very, very good opinion. I liked his breakdown of the show. He did. I don't think he's necessarily wrong. I have an answer to him because his opinion is that they're still a big four, but that they moved Survivor Series for Crown Jewel and that the Saudis sort of bought their way. I don't think there's a big four. If you remember, in the summer when they announced Indianapolis getting Royal Rumble, right? They also announced that they would get a future Mania and a future SummerSlam, right? And Pat McAfee called it the Holy Trinity, right? I think they have a big three now. It's Mania, SummerSlam, and Royal Rumble. It's their big three. There's no longer a big four. It's the big three. Those are going to be the matches that have the, you know, 8-match cards. For Mania, and those are going to be the ones that are also 2 days long now, right? You're going to have 2-day long SummerSlam next year, 2-day long Mania. I think eventually we're going to get a 2-day long Royal Rumble, and those are going to be the ones that have like 5 to 6 matches per night. So you're going to end up with like that 12-match card. Whereas the rest of the year, you're going to get the 5-match cards, right? Maybe a 6th, maybe, right? The second is we got to discuss Bronson Reed. I was calling for this spot, right, for him to jump off the top. I don't think the spot was stupid. I know a lot of people are going to sit here and say, well, it was a stupid spot. It wasn't a stupid spot. The problem was he didn't execute it properly, and he paid the price. He shattered his fucking ankle, right? I don't understand if it's training. I don't know if it's training or if what, because again, I'm not in the business. I'm not here to correct anybody. But to me, it would make common sense. Like, if you're going to do that jump, not to land on your feet, right? Like, you're a big dude. Like, just land on your chest. Go chest first into the table. But he tried to land on his feet. Adam Copeland did the same thing when he broke his leg. Right. So I don't know if it's training, if it's just like in the moment, not practicing the spot. That's a spot where it's like, hey, are you comfortable landing belly first? Like, you a big dude, you got cushion there. If you weren't comfortable landing on your stomach like that, I don't Like Bronson Reed could have done like a reverse tsunami. I'm not saying do like a somersault, but do like a senton like Kevin Owens does, right? Where Kevin Owens will like jump and land on his ass and his back, right? You could have done it that way where you didn't land on your feet. And unfortunately, Bronson Reed's out. Apparently, Tongaloa is out for extended periods of time. We had like three major injuries in that match. I don't think we're getting The Rock at WrestleMania. I don't. At least in this story. And I'm going to leave it there because Tuesday, I'll go ahead and give this away. Our Let's Get Cooking on Tuesday. Being that it's the last Let's Get Cooking of the year, we're going to do a predict a way too early WrestleMania 41 card. That's on Tuesday. Me and Wavy D, right? To probably be a major portion of the show on Tuesday. But a way too early WrestleMania prediction, right? I don't think we get The Rock versus Roman this year. If he's there, I think there's another match that they do at Mania, and you'll see what I predict on Tuesday. But the way this booking is first off, Triple H is like the most predictable, boring, uncreative, and lazy booker that I know of right now. Like at least when Tony Khan tries something, it may not be the best and it may not work and it may be stupid, but at least he takes risks. Right, at least he does some things that are a little bit risky. Triple H is safe, right? Triple H like could have done some things that like it would actually require him to be creative, but instead he plays the safe option. I think he plays favorites. I'm be completely honest, but all these things I already knew because I watched NXT when he was solely in control of Black and Gold NXT, right? And so like. I'm not the biggest fan of his booking. I'm uber confused. One of those, right? When I say he's uncreative, guys, we saw on Monday the New Day storyline where over a period of 6 months, these two have basically torn themselves apart, all came to a head one night 2 weeks ago, right? Or, well, about 10 days ago, right? It'll be 2 weeks tomorrow, so 14 days ago, where they all came at each other, and you know, basically said all the worst things about each other. Right. This gets us to this Monday, where apparently in a week's time they talked it over, they mended whatever was wrong in the relationship, and then came both at the same time to the conclusion that this was all Big E's fault, right? And Big E showed up and they laid a hammer to him. But right, so essentially it was, we're going to tease you with a separation and they're going to fight. They're going to attack each other. They're going to have some time after the attack. It appears like, oh, shit's going down. Shit hits the fan. And instead of a split, it's a double turn. And we get to, and we, right, you see that on Monday, and then you come in and watch SmackDown, and you see these same exact plot points. It's not the same story in terms of, like, words and everything being said, but it's the same plot. It's the same story type. It's the same, in a way, the same story, right? In that it's Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, where they've gone after each other the last few weeks. There's been physical attacks. And then apparently all of that is forgiven. And Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa both turn heel. And they win the title. Right? Excuse me. I just... uncreative, lazy booking, man. And I'm not for it. I'm just not for it at all. Yeah, I don't think we're getting The Rock. I don't think there's anything in that story. With the new bloodline winning and the way then they came out on Tuesday and Solo and Jacob are all on the same accord, there's no like questioning of anything. I 100% expect WrestleMania for Roman this year to be Solo versus Roman. That's a sneak peek for Tuesday, right? And so I think The Rock goes another direction if he comes in, right? We talked about New Day. So let's end this episode talking about CM Punk. So they aired the behind the scenes of CM Punk's return, right, to the WWE. And y'all, my first response to this is I have complete confidence to say right now that if he was an ass in the locker room in AEW, that it was completely forced out of him. What I mean by that is you can't watch this and tell me that CM Punk's a locker room cancer. You just can't tell me that. No, nothing in this tells me that he's a locker room cancer. Every single person that he saw from the second he stepped into the backstage area, welcome back, man. Love to have you back. Glad to have you back. Oh, I can't believe you're back. Right? If he was an asshole in AEW, it was because they forced him to that point. I thoroughly believe his side of the story, that he came in, he wanted to be the old guy that taught the new guys how to run the business. And they didn't listen to him. They wanted to do it their own way. They wanted the playground. And he wasn't for it. And when he tried to change it, they then tried to get him removed. So, again, thank you, Jack Perry. Thank you, Young Bucks. Thank you, Adam Page. Thank you all for being gigantic asswipes and forcing CM Punk out. Because of that very reason, CM Punk may have just won Feud of the Year. We'll see what other people think of. On Tuesday the 17th, he may have, you know, been in the Feud of the Year, may have been in the Match of the Year, had a banger of a feud with Drew McIntyre, probably going to have a banger of a feud in the future with Seth Rollins, and we may eventually get to Punk versus Roman, which I never thought I would actually ever get to see. And I'm not a big CM Punk fan, right? I wasn't a big fan of him, you know, before he left, wasn't really a fan of him when he was in AEW. But here's the thing. Cheering for CM Punk is sort of like he's sort of like the symbol, like you know, in the same way Junkyard James, I think, cheers for Junkyard Perry would be a great name for Jungle Bitch. I think Junkyard James cheers for him because of what Jack Perry represents, which is sort of like the anti-CM Punk guy, right? He was the guy who officially made CM Punk get fired, right? And he's like the savior of AEW, right? And I look at CM Punk as like, you're like the guy that's fully going to expose this company for the fucking childish run bullshit of a company, right? And you're seeing shit come out now about like Ray Phoenix saying, you know, inappropriate things are happening, bad work environment, like shit's crumbling, dog. Ariel Monroe, I know her as Big Swole. She came out like 3 years ago at this point with, you know, with an expose of the women's division. Like shit's hitting the fan for them 5 years in. They can't ever seem to escape controversy. And I'm watching this. I'm 100% convinced that when you give CM Punk a non-toxic environment, like an actual work environment that's professional, that he's a fine employee. But when you put him in a toxic place, he gets toxic. Right, because I don't know if you guys know about this, right? If you have a body of water that's 100% toxic, right? If I have a body of water that's full of radiation, right, and I take something that's not full of radiation, has zero radiation in it, and I put it in 100% of radiation, the 0% radiation loses out and it starts to take on radiation, right? So if you take something that's toxic, right, and then you introduce something that's not toxic to something that is toxic, that non-toxic becomes toxic. That's just nature, right? So when you put something like CM Punk, who had good intentions of coming to AEW to sort of help build the brand, and you put him not toxic, right, into a toxic environment, when you know that he can be petty and toxic, right? Like, there's a little bit of toxicity, but not as much as AEW is, right? So you stick him in that, he becomes toxic, and you end up with the result that you got. But my second takeaway is, it's quite funny. WWE's been doing these backstage things forever, for since the WWE Network really started, right? And they're not afraid to show you the behind-the-scenes stuff. Tony Khan was basically forced to show the behind-the-scenes stuff because people, you know, didn't believe their story. And so they aired their behind-the-scenes of the Wembley shit. And it's, I just, you watch all of this and you can't tell me this is CM Punk's fault. I'm sorry. I'm to this day, I don't think there's anything that's going to change my opinion. I just don't. I don't think there's anything that changes my opinion on that right thing. But that's this episode of the Slap of Me Wrestling Podcast. Thank you all for listening. I will see you on Tuesday, and with along with Wavy D. And until then, you have a great rest of your weekend. And I will, again, we'll see you on the next episode of the Slap of Me Wrestling Podcast.
So hit that subscribe, come along for the ride. AEWWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay. Slapping meat wrestling every Tuesday.